Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 111. Yes, this is the 111th episode of the Caffeination. This is a rather interesting milestone. I like triplets, so this is kind of pretty cool. Hopefully everybody out there is having a good week. Everybody's having a great time doing whatever it is that they're trying to do. We've been having a kind of a crazy weekend again here at the Caffeination. Rearing children is hard. That about sums up everything we've experienced this weekend. And he wasn't even being that bad. He just needs a lot of attention. And it kind of gets in the way of trying to get other things done that need to get done around the house. So, like I said, it's been a little bit of a crazy weekend. But I think almost every weekend since we had Paul, it's been kind of crazy. But crazy in a good way. Not complaining, just stating facts. That being said, this is going to be a short and sweet edition of the Caffeination here tonight. We do have PodSave music. We do have tech tidbits. We do have one little caffeinated bit to send your way. But there's not a whole lot of information that I've thought that I needed to pass on to you today. I've been babbling on and on for extended periods of time throughout some of these recent episodes. And we're trying to cut the time back down to a much more manageable episode. So hopefully people will enjoy and appreciate that fact. We've noticed that we've started including stories that previously we might have cut out, so we're trying to cull stories and get only the best of the best, and we're not just going to include stories for one joke or another, or attempted joke, as the case may be most of the time with us. Alright, first up we have some PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network. music.podshow.com. We have Jeremy Rowe and his song Caffeine and Nicotine. Anybody have any idea why we picked that one? Well, no, although I don't smoke, I do enjoy a good cup of coffee every now and then, and I could probably use one right about now. Alright, again from the PodSafe Music Network, here's Jeremy Rowe and his song Caffeine and Nicotine. Let me know what you think. So free.
diamond comes to mind, but traffic's just too bad outside. He says, but I don't need no food, cause it never fills me quite like these. The only things he needs are caffeine and egg and tea.
Again, that was Jeremy Rowe and his song Caffeine and Nicotine from the PodSafe Music Network. If you head on over to the PMN, then you can actually purchase that track. That's one of the very few that right now that's up for sale. There's more every day that seem to be added to that list, so it's kind of cool. But if you enjoyed the musical stylings of one Jeremy Rowe, then please feel free to head on over there and check it out. They are MP3s unencumbered by DRM, which is fabulous if you're into that kind of thing. In fact, it will play on any music player out there. That's a very positive thing about it. So there's no extra copy protection or anything else. You're basically on your honor. You pay 99 cents, and the song is yours. Wonderful idea. All right. First up, we wanted to talk a little bit about our sponsor. This show is sponsored by GoToMeeting. So these days, whether you're in business or you simply want to share something with your family and friends, email and voicemails just don't cut it. That's why you should try GoToMeeting, an online meeting solution that will revolutionize how you try and communicate with people. GoToMeeting makes it easy to provide training and share information with everybody. All you need is your PC, an internet connection, and a phone. You invite people to meet you online, your attendees see your computer screen on their monitors, and best of all, you can meet as long as you want, as often as you need, for one flat rate. But don't take my word for it, try it for yourself, free for 45 days, no credit card is required. Just visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and type in the promo code PODCAST. That's PODCAST. That's GoToMeeting.com, the Try It Free button, and the promo code PODCAST. Try GoToMeeting free today. All right, so again, we'd like to thank GoToMeeting for sponsoring this show. It makes everything that much easier when it comes time, when all the bills are due. Hope everybody out there is having a good show. I'm having a good show so far. I hope you're having a good time. We encourage people to head on over to our show, sign up for the mailing list and everything. You can head on over to www.caffination.com. That's caffination.com. You can send all your comments, feedback, suggestions, hate mail, whatever else you feel like sending our way, whether it's suggestions for news stories, things that you think we could be doing better, pretty much anything you feel like to, or if you just want to talk about something we said on the show. Now you can either post a comment at the end of the show, which we heartily recommend, or you can just drop me a line and I'll mention it on the next show. That's caffination@gmail.com. And if you're ever on Skype and you want to talk to me and you see my little Skype ID up there, it's caffination.com. Alright, so now that we've got all that information out of the way, I guess we should delve on into the tech tidbit section here. Now there's a couple little references we're going to try and explain, make sure everybody understands where we're coming from. We're going to start with the most relevant, the most normalized stories, and then we're going to slowly descend into the offbeat news realm, and hopefully you'll be with us on this. Alright, first up here, if you remember, there's a reference in the middle of The Matrix, the movie, where one of the characters talks to Neo and calls him Coppertop, basically insinuating that the Matrix, the machines, had used humans for batteries and you know, the whole Duracell reference. So, I mean, not a lot of people necessarily caught that particular part of the reference within the movie, but they get the idea that humans are used as, to power things. Well, there's something a little bit similar to that. Apparently, a gym in Hong Kong has hooked batteries up to their exercise machines, harnessing the power of sweaty people to keep the lights on. I don't know exactly how much power is generated by all the people, you know, dancing around and using the treadmills and everything else like that, but I do think it's a novel idea. I think it's a rather interesting use of the obvious kinetic energy abounding in those places. So I wonder exactly how far they can take it. What kind of kinetic energy can they actually harness? I'm pretty sure these are the simplest ways to do it because you're actually cranking a little generator, so that's fun. But I wonder if there's other places. The story over at the Sci-Fi Tech blog actually says, I wonder if in a nightclub, they say a nightclub in Rotterdam is installing a dance floor that will convert the stomping feet into energy. I thought that was just an off-the-cuff reference. They have no link for that one, but, or do they? All right, I'm completely wrong here. They do have a link to that one. It's kind of crazy. But, yeah, just thought I should throw that out there. I thought it would be interesting for everybody to check it out. The next little thing we have up here is, I don't know how many of you out there have ever gotten on an airplane with a computer and you're trying to do something, you're trying to look up, you're just trying to operate your computer past the time as you're flying through the airways in a cylindrical aluminum tube, so you're just sitting there trying to get some work done.
You might be a business traveler, you might not. And have you ever tried to use a mouse? And I'm not talking the little trackpad or the little eraser button that sticks up in the middle of the keyboards. I mean an actual mouse. Trackballs are somewhat easier to use. I mean, I've actually used trackballs in airplanes, and I'm a rather large gentleman. It's hard enough for me to squeeze myself into that area. Having the extra room to actually use an external mouse and not have the little hand cramp associated with the trackpad, it doesn't really happen. So there's a new gadget out there called the Logisys Optical Finger Mouse. It actually clips onto your finger, has a little laser sighter, and then as you move the laser sighter over the surface, it actually moves the mouse around the screen. There's two little mouse buttons and a little clicky wheel. So this seems to be kind of interesting, and I wonder if there's a way you can invert it so that if the sight isn't along the top of your finger, but rather the underneath. Just still really innovative concept, really interesting idea. They're probably going to start using this for other things as well, like being used for handicap, computer usage and things along those lines. But one of the things that I'm thinking of is this thing looks more and more like a faux terror device than anything I've seen recently. I mean, it's like a laser scope for your fingers. So I'm pretty sure if you're on an airplane, you have this thing clipped onto your computer and a little laser's coming out the front, yeah, they might alert the authorities and you might have to explain yourself more than once, so... On to our next little topic here. Apparently there's a school in San Jose, California that is banning homework. And they have strange ideas as to how they're saying that this is a good thing. Now, let me preface all this with, I did relatively well in school, just good enough to get out. I never did homework. I hated homework with a passion. I always thought the time at home was my time. And, my parents didn't have to do work when they came home. But what do? Then I go out and get a job where I have to do stuff at home anyway. But that's no concern of anything. But it's just... I never really understood the concept of homework other than, just the rote memorization. And that should kind of be on your own. If you don't think that you can... if you don't think that you can... benefit from studying every little minute detail, man, I can't speak, about the Civil War, then you're just not going to do well on the next test. I mean, that should be up to you entirely. Well, apparently there's a different reasons that they're trying to use in Oak Hill. Oak Hill is trying to say, or Oak Knoll, rather, has eliminated homeworkers for third grade, for everybody in elementary school because they said that there's almost no effect on whether or not a child does homework to how good they do in school, in elementary school. Middle school, which is grades 6 to 8, yes, there is an effect. And in high school, there's a huge effect. Now, I know a couple people who this would not be the case for. In fact, most of my friends in high school really weren't necessarily the most studious people after hours, shall we say, but they all seem to do rather well for themselves, both in school and afterwards. The only thing that I did notice not doing any homework almost for the entirety of my schooling career. When I actually got to college and needed to do homework, not that it was assigned, but I needed to do homework, I was less able to do it, less able to find myself ways to study and manage my time. But that was my problem. All right, back to the story here. What they're trying to do is they're trying to say that basically students need extra time when they're at home to interact with their families and schedule all their extracurricular activities. All right, I don't know if it's me, and this could be my little bit of a parent coming out at this point, but aren't extracurricular activities extra? And if your school requires homework, then shouldn't that come before the whole baseball, soccer, and everything else? I mean, just putting it out there, just thought it was a strange story. They have kind of, I don't know, wishy-washy ways that they're, you know, justifying what they're doing here. I mean, there's plenty of arguments, good sound arguments, that I could probably see them putting forth, but they just don't have any there. All right, and like I said, we're slowly descending here into stranger and stranger stories. So we started off with the rather innovative one with the batteries and on into no more homework. Now we have, all right, how about your own personal submarine? Yes, there's a company out of Germany called U-Boat Rocks, Works, I'm sorry, W-O-R-X. And first off, there's a whole bunch of interesting stories about this on the internet right now. I actually linked the one from Gizmag because they explain the most information about the story. I really appreciate when people do this when they're researching stories. So first off, there's a single-seater and a double-seater. Single-seater costs around £65,000, United Kingdom. So that would probably be around $90,000 to $95,000, I think. Maybe probably more. I didn't have time to convert it because I saw this rather late in the game, shall we say. Weighs just over a ton at 1.1 tons, is 9 feet long by 6 feet tall, and has the ability to submerge for 2.5 hours. All this information is available in dribs and drabs on some of the other things, and the price was linked nowhere. And then the other thing that I really appreciated from this article, a lot of people, when you say, oh yeah, it's a German U-boat, right off the bat they say, isn't that what the Germans called their submarines in World War II? There's a definite negative connotation for that, and they go to great lengths. In fact, they devoted a small paragraph at the end, and I'm just going to read it verbatim, and I really appreciate this. This is the kind of reporting that I enjoy. Now, before we start getting a lot of correspondence, the term U-boat is derived from the German Unterseeboot, undersea boat, though the term U-boat in the English language usage refers exclusively to German naval submarines. In German, the term U-boat refers to any submarine. So now that we have that all out of the way, I thought that was kind of interesting. And I really appreciate when people are doing research and people are throwing stuff up online there, actually take that extra time and say, yes, we know this could be a problem, and here is your answer. I love having questions answered before I even have the chance to formulate them. And the funny thing is, I was looking for the price originally because I found it on Sci-Fi Blog, and then I found it on Gizmodo, and it was just there's certain things that everybody seems to question the first time they hear a story like this. Oh wow, that's awesome, how much does it cost? If you don't have that bit of information, your story just seems to fall flat. So we try to provide all the bits of information that you need here at the Caffeination, and in that vein, we're going to be moving on because I don't think there's very much else we can say without being very repetitive, other than the fact that I'm kind of curious where exactly you'd go. Apparently you do have to actually go to training. You have to have some kind of driver's license for this boat, which I think is awesome to begin with. But it's a 3-hour training course, and then they give you your submarine and with the addition of £65,000. And you just head on your way. And that's for the single-seater, by the way. If you want to bring a passenger, it's probably significantly more. And your dog, probably not so much. So that we're leaving all that aside. Like, where exactly would you go? You have 2.5 hours of drive time, let's just say. So you have about an hour and a quarter out and an hour and a quarter back. And you can go down to, I think they said, 50 meters. So that's roughly 150 feet. So that's pretty deep. especially if you're on the eastern seaboard, you're not going to be able to see anything. So I'm hoping there's some kind of homing device for the for the faint of heart that actually, you know, head out to sea and then just sort of forget that they have to actually turn around and come back. Because I could definitely see a couple people saying, all right, I have 2.5 hours of gas. I'll just head out and see what happens. Nah, you kind of have to have a little for the return home trip too, buddy. So it's a whole self-contained system. There's all kinds of filters and everything. It's just an interesting and wonderful engineering marvel that I thought I would pass on to the listening audience here at the Caffe Nation. All right, now the next thing up here is a little bit more mundane, but has kind of an interesting idea to it. And this is the flying alarm clock. Now, it has a giant propeller stuck to the rounded base, so it looks kind of like a black version of the old IMAX, the ones that had the screens coming straight out of the bottom of them. Kind of looked like a desk lamp. So there's a very easy-to-read LCD. There's a whole bunch of clock radio features. And then as your alarm goes off, this whirligig throws itself over 9 feet into the air, and the unit will not stop ringing until you find this propeller and put it back on the alarm clock. Now, let me preface this entire explanation with a little bit more about myself. I'm one of those people who would need something like this normally. It takes me a long time to get up for almost anything, so much so that I cannot have my alarm clock actually within easy reach, because if I can't hit the snooze button, I will either beat the alarm clock or I'll throw it. When I was in high school, I actually threw an alarm clock across the room, didn't realize I did it, and overslept promptly. But looking into this, it seems like an interesting gadget, but I definitely think that there could be easier ways to defeat it. Like, if you really wanted to, like, I could see somebody buying, like, a parent buying this for a kid or something like that. Ah, now they're going to have to get up because it's going to irritate them. No, first of all, you could turn the volume down on the alarm. That's workaround number one, shall we say. Workaround number two is to put something on top of the whirligig at night so that it never flies off. I wonder if it would actually still sound, or if you could just leave it off and leave the volume down. I wonder what would happen. Now, if it got steadily louder the longer you left it off, I would think that's kind of easy. There is a snooze function that rings every 7 minutes, but I don't know. We'll see exactly how this one's received. I'm waiting to see if anybody actually picks it up. Now, the next thing we have here is kind of a little bit of a corporate bait and switch. Apparently, if you've ever gone to Best Buy and you ask them to look up something that you found on their website, they pull up a website which looks almost, but not exactly, quite like the Best Buy website that you might see on the outside. That's because they have an internal version of BestBuy.com. These are versions that sometimes do not have other sales on them. They do not have some of the information that's available on the external Best Buy site. And the pricing is usually different. Now, apparently Best Buy has said, oh, well, yes, we do have an internal website. And you know, they've actually come out and they tried to justify it for certain things. Now, the only time I could see a justification for having an internal copy of BestBuy.com would be if you wanted to validate that something was online but the internet connection was down. Then it's perfectly fine to have a mirror of what's on your external site. But now having advanced copies of the ads or having completely different versions of the website, there doesn't really seem to be any kind of legal precedent for having that be legal. Kind of interesting. I wonder where exactly this one's going to go. I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I just definitely wanted to bring it to the forefront again, see if anybody out there has actually ever caught somebody from Best Buy. We had an experience where we were looking for a video camera, a DV cam, and they pulled up the website, and it just looked wrong. Nothing rung a bell in my head at the time, but they pulled up the website to see if there were any sales on it, and then the guy said, no, I don't see anything here, and quickly closed it out. Now, when we went home, I looked on it just to see a couple product reviews, and there were no sales or anything, but the website just had a different feel to it. I don't know if maybe it didn't have all the options, or it was just something off, and I never really could put my finger on it. So when this story originally came up, it just struck that chord and said, yeah, that is where it came from. So I just wanted to pass it along to everybody else there and let you know that if you're ever in Best Buy and things just don't seem to be going your way, if you're trying to prove a point by having a link up on one of their websites, then you definitely might want to have them go to the real BestBuy.com. All right, and the last little bit of information we have here for our tech tidbits section is 10 failed Japanese products. Now, the Japanese are known for having somewhat crazy products on the market. I mean, they have some kind of fetish with the cute, shall we say. There is a definite overabundance of interesting thumb drives and sushi-themed objects and Hello Kitty everything. But there are actually a fairly comprehensive list of 10 products which just never seem to pass muster. Now, the first of them, I'm going to go through all of them and kind of describe them a little bit. Have you ever been outside and your umbrella kind of inverts and pops out? And, you know, most people utter some kind of expletive at that point in time and promptly throw the umbrella out or try and rebend it. Well, this is a rainwater collector. There's a tube that comes out of the bottom of the inverted umbrella and into some kind of carrying device. I don't know why you would need this. Maybe it has scientific purposes. All right, now the next thing is the Swiss Army knife of garden tools. Yes, this is a giant, what looks like to be 3.5 foot long army knife that has things like a full-size shovel, hoe, rake, spade, pickaxe, I don't know what the other things are, root hook, just kind of crazy. Again, these are failed products. They show you someone looking like a mix between a Japanese schoolgirl and the Pennsylvania Dutch Amish community using the tool, but I think this might be a little bit beyond the Amish at this point. Yeah. Now, continuing with the whole umbrella thing, number 3 is an umbrella holder. It's a unit that straps to your head, and then the umbrella comes down across your head and holds it in front of you. Now, I've seen these before. And much less interesting ideas. They didn't have the handle for the umbrella. They just had the, you know, an umbrella hat. And that's an interesting enough idea. I don't see why this deserves its place among the rest of the stuff. Number 4, it looks like 2 Coke cans half filled with some kind of liquid strapped in glasses formation on the woman's head. And the caption that they have is says, "Really? Really? I don't have a clue." We're going to pretty much assume the same thing here and just go along our merry way. On to item number 5, which I kind of wish they actually did make. This is a tie with a built-in wallet in it. Now, I've been at proms, I've been at dances, I've been at funerals, weddings, everything else like that. And you always wish that you had a couple extra things with you. Now, my father and I are both Eagle Scouts, and he always kind of lived by the, you know, you always be prepared thing. So we always had, you know, he always taught me to have a pen in my pocket when you go places because you never know when you might need to write something or lend a pen to somebody. And when you're going places that are, you know, relatively nice, like functions like this, he used to pack a sewing kit, something I try to do whenever I remember. I usually pack a little bit of aspirin or something like that. But if you're someplace that doesn't have pockets, like a lot of the rentals suits don't have pockets, well, what happens if you could use your wallet tie? Now, this thing seems kind of interesting. I don't know if it's a clip-on, although I think it might be. So, just definitely very crazy. Although, I kind of think there would be a market for this one. Number 6 is the 360-degree camera. Yes, this is a series of cameras strapped onto your head in some form of headband with a series of wires going at the top and then one giant shutter at the bottom. And after you're done, all of the pictures are the complete 360-degree panorama. Yeah, not so much. The number 7 is telescopic slippers. So you imagine walking around in normal slippers with little handles on the back of them. Well, if you see a bug and they have a lovely roach in the picture there, you take your sandal off, extend the handle with what looks like up to be 2 feet maybe, and you can smack the bug without actually stepping on it. Number 8 is extra teeth. Yep, we're just going to move right along. Number 9 is a napkin feeder. It's a roll of toilet paper that straps to your head in case you have a runny nose. Number 10 is awesome. It's a solar-powered cigarette lighter. There's a giant magnifying glass, a clip for your cigarette, and it has the angle straight down so you can move the lens back and forth, and it smolders the end of your cigarette for you. There are 12 products, I'm sorry. Number 11 is a fresh air mask. It allows you to put your houseplants in bags and breathe off of them. Now, this could actually be dangerous if you try and do this at night, because a little known fact is while plants do produce oxygen during the day through photosynthesis, they produce carbon dioxide at night when they're trying to get energy without the use of photosynthesis. I forget what the other method of them gaining energy is, but they produce carbon dioxide at night night just like we do. So having your house full of plants is great during the day, and at night really doesn't help you that much. And number 12 is what looks like a modification of the cone that they put on animals after they've had surgery. This is to keep your hair out of your food. I guess they never heard of hair ties, the person who did this. Kind of makes your face look like you're in a daisy costume. Interesting, but no real market. That's why it's a failed product. So that about wraps up the tech tidbits here today, and significantly shorter than we had been. So far, we're only at 30 minutes, and we have one caffeinated bit, a little bit of information, and then we're going to send you on your way. So on Wednesday, we're still looking for concepts for what you'd like the tech talk to be on. So if there's some concept you'd like us to expound upon, if there's something you think that we might need to explain a little bit more about, then please feel free to send us an email at caffeination@gmail.com. If we can't think of anything by that point in time, we'll find something in the we've talked about in the last couple shows and expand on it a little bit. And that brings us to the caffeinated bits. The caffeinated bits for today's show, it's a single entry from our friends over at the Energy Fiend blog, and it talks a little bit about some of the new things that are coming out over at 7-Eleven. Yes, there's a new drink coming out at 7-Eleven called the Upshot. Not only are they stopping with their Fusion Energy coffee, it's coffee with extra caffeine in it. No, they're actually going to be selling Upshot energy drinks, and they have, the first ever caffeinated Slurpee. Yes, the Slurpee is actually going to be made using the Full Throttle energy drink, and kind of interesting. I wonder exactly how it's going to taste in Slurpee form, because I've had some rather good sodas, but when they become Slurpees, not so much. So we'll see exactly how that works out. I'm definitely going to see if I can head by the 7-Eleven that's on campus and see if they have any of these, because that'd be fun to play with. I haven't found any place that sells the cocaine beverage, because I really wanted to see that. But if anybody out there tries it, please send us an email. Let us know how it tastes, because I'm really curious as to how that actually ended up working out. They got a lot of great press, and I'm pretty sure they sold a lot of beverages right off the bat, but never really found out about how it actually tasted. Because if it tasted like warmed over dog poo, then there's nobody who's going to buy it, no matter how cool the name is after a certain point in time. So that about wraps up the show here for today. Like I said, it's going to be a quick one. There's not a lot of information that we thought fit, or saw fit rather, to send on your way. So we're just under 35 minutes today. I'll just give you a little bit of a rundown on the information, where you can find our lovely show, and thank everybody. Please head on over to our website at www.caffeination.com. That's where this show lives and plays. You can send all your comments, feedback, suggestion, and hate mail over to caffeination@gmail.com, and we will get back to you. This show, the Caffeination Podcast, is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. You can head on over to techpodcasts.com and check out the rest of the member shows. And we are also a member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's a social podcasting network site. Lots of fun shows over there to check out. And last but not least, if you're looking for this show on MySpace, you can head on over to myspace.com/caffeination and click add to your friends, and we'll gladly add you in. Thanks for listening, everybody, and stay caffeinated, people.